always keep an eye behind you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The most gratifying thing about the film project is that Vietnam veterans, you know, they are not a monolithic group. I might have mentioned that. There is no monolith, but a lot of them look at the film as the real skinny from guys on the ground. You know, it's just, it's no BS. There's no politics. There's no opinions. It's just,
yeah,
that's good.
Boy, I'd love to sit here and talk songwriting with you for another hour, but our time's running short. I have to mention your logo. I saw the on your website, the Buffalo Romeo logo, and it says "No more negative waves." Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, that's both my personal credo at this point, and you know, my hope that we can all move together without creaming each other over our minor disagreements, and all work towards a higher goal that we all have, which is a better life for all of us here in the United States and in the world.
Amen. Well, keep up the good work. Do you have any plans to do another Swing States road show? I might want to join you on that one.
Leave that to somebody else this time around. Yeah.
Okay. No,
we're hitting the high road now. When they go low, we stay high.
My guest has been Lee Jones. His duo is called Buffalo Romeo. Look for him around town. And now he plays places like 16 Tons and Viking Braggot. I don't know. A few places here in Eugene.
Places like that.
Yeah. You've been listening to Train of Thought. My name's Rob Tobias. Thank you for listening. Till next time. Train of Thought can be heard on KEPW 97.3 in Eugene. It's also posted on soundcloud.com/RobTobias. For comments and suggestions, email rob@robtobias.com.
Right, that should be both of us on. Nan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi,
yeah,
Josh.
I just want to make sure Nan.
Hi, Josh. Okay. Both
oh,
of
hi,
you.
Nan.
Hi, Josh. Both of you are on the air right now, so you can start, and I'll be quiet. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
And we're live. Are we live?
Yes, sir. You're both live.
Okay. I can share that. I can share that on our Facebook page.
I can
anyway.
Get you a recording. We'll get you a recording of it. All right, this is KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Community Radio. All right, so this is Talk is Cheap. I'm talking with Josh Caracco of the Springfield Eugene Tenants Association. You're the volunteer hotline manager?
That's how I describe myself at the moment. yeah.
And so it's a new organization, right? The Springfield Eugene Tenants Association.
That is absolutely true. So Springfield Eugene Tenant Association is a 501c3 nonprofit organization devoted to the rights and interests of renters here. I'll read you our mission statement, I suppose, if I can pull that up. And then I'll explain. CETA is a 501c3 nonprofit public service organization that is dedicated to renters' rights and interests. We accomplish our goals by assisting, educating, and empowering tenants in the Springfield, Eugene area. We believe that housing rights are human rights and that affordable and accessible housing are the foundation of any strong community. So our main service is a hotline that tenants can call with their housing questions. I'm the person you're currently most likely to talk to if you call our service. Hotline is a bit of a misnomer. You have to leave a message. You could also submit online, and we call you back. Since we're entirely volunteer run, this gives us a chance to do some preliminary research and, you know, dig up some reputable information, which, you know, we do have readily available depending on the question. But it makes it easier for us to respond. We're not exactly a crisis line, although we sometimes get calls like that, and we're happy to forward people to other resources. We're not lawyers. We don't give legal advice, but we understand a lot about landlord-tenant flaw, and we can show people where to find accurate information and help walk them through it and help them figure out if they need to talk to a real lawyer or not and how they might go about doing that, or if there might be another service that's available for them. Do you want to hear more?
So how did this get started?
Yeah.
Go into the history a little bit.
Absolutely. I can totally do that. We've been a registered nonprofit since April of 2019, so almost a year, but not even quite a year. Our hotline has been open since July of 2019, so we're very new. Of the current board members, three of them, these three guys, started discussing renters' issues that they were having, and there were some bigger groups they were involved with too, but they were just kind of talking, and I wasn't even involved with them at that point. And one of them had this idea to start a hotline. He had worked on a hotline for something else, and he had also recognized that there were a lot of other hotlines, like CATS, the Community Lab Tents in Portland. And, I mean, I know there's tenant hotlines in the Bay Area and all kinds of other cities, but there was nothing like that in Eugene, or Springfield or Lane County at all. And so they had that idea, and at some point, I guess I would say, and it's not because of us, I should clarify, but things kind of really started to take off a bit more, I suppose, correspondingly when a woman named Lori Haber and myself got involved independently and together. Lori works for Legal Aid and actually wrote someone at KEPW was going to interview her, hopefully at some point, about a wonderful report she authored on the criminalization of homelessness. That was as an attorney for Legal Aid, an advocate, not as a board member of CETA. And I got involved and had more free time maybe than other people, and the drive to start running. And I first kind of volunteered to just start running our hotline queue, but quickly started doing lots of other things because I had time to do it. And we expanded our board a bit. I wasn't one of the original board members, but we lost one board member and then we added three. Two of our board members work for Homes for Good, helping people, but that only, they can only, in that role, independent of CETA completely, they're working with people who have vouchers, and CETA can serve anyone. And so that's different. Homes for Good is our local housing authority. So that's a different thing. That's they distribute Section 8 vouchers and they do all the administration work for people who have received housing assistance. They also have some of their own housing. That's the local housing authority. We're not related to them. Some of our board members, care about housing and also happen to work for them as a day job. But there was no organization in town that was just helping renters understand their rights related to housing or how to navigate those systems. And so we started, and we've just been figuring out. I like to joke that agencies need to get their together. I'm doing this out of my effing living room. We never had a physical office. We were having open meetings, but now we're doing that kind of in our smaller core group via, like everyone else, via some video chat or some phone conference call or something else. It's a lot to adjust to. The point of it, though, is we're a hotline, and so volunteers, I tend to take them with our hotline number, but sometimes volunteers just take them off their own phones. And we have a way to interact, and I send people information about calls and help them understand where information about how to respond to those calls might be found. And we have like a queue you can sign up online, for. Everything's completely remote, including our office. we're entirely volunteer at the moment. We have no funding. We have like around $2,000 in the bank. We recently finished our first grant application for some public funding. I'll be presenting next week on, and we're just figuring all that stuff out. Normally, under other conditions, I would say you can go to Springfield UGC and Tenant Association. .com/donate and give us money if you want to support the work we do. It's completely tax deductible. Under these current circumstances, you know, I don't know. I'd say tell your governments like that you support our work and take your money and give it to something like Food for Lane County. But you know, if you have a lot, you could do both.
Josh, can I interrupt you for a second? DJ Susti, will you talk? Because you weren't coming through very well before, and I want to make sure that's corrected.
Yeah, well, so what rights do tenants have in Eugene? Don't they have, isn't there 30 days that has to be given notice before someone can be evicted?
Tenants have a lot of rights in the state of Oregon.
Do they come from the state or do they come from the Fed?
Both. Tenants' rights are complicated. The federal government guarantees certain things like the Fair Housing Act, in terms of, you know, when you're applying for housing and when you're in housing, you're protected from discrimination based on, you know, if you're a member of a protected class. Some states and even our city to some extent have expansions on what is considered a protected class. And additionally, states have landlord-tenant law, and the state of Oregon has something called the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. It's ORS Chapter 90, and it depends what state or city you compare us to. The state, not entirely, but some of the laws are more preemptive of cities in enforcing stronger laws than the state law. It's like rent control, for example. This is there. Other states like California, cities put in rent have put in rent control previously, and there's no state preemption on an individual locality enforcing rent control. But in Oregon, the state has a preemption on an individual locality enforcing rent control. Now, last year, the state passed a bill originally, of course now it's in the chapter, called SB 608, which was a renter protections bill, which a lot of people were calling it rent control. I think that's a misnomer. It was a rent cap. It capped the amount that a landlord could raise rent under most circumstances, although there is an exemption for newer buildings, buildings with a more recent certificate of occupancy, to be clear. So the reason this is different than rent control is because rent control is usually on a city level and it's changed and it's determined by a rent control board, whereas this just is a cap on the amount landlords can generally increase rent. And it really was tied to another protection that had to do with no-cause evictions, which is just terminating someone's rental agreement for no reason. Of course, this bill only applies to people if they've been in their home for more than a year, and it also has some exemptions. It's actually a very complicated bill. A lot of tenant advocates and activists were really angry that it wasn't strong enough, and of course, landlords were complaining that it was too strong, some of them. But on both sides...
go back. So you can be evicted, if you're in there less than a year, you can be evicted with no cause.
Yes, well... Okay, so there's two things. If you have a fixed-term rental agreement that cannot be terminated in the middle of it, but at the end of it, a landlord, if you've been there less than a year, could choose not to renew your agreement for no reason, and all they would have to do was give you, that's if they have a fixed term. Now, if you were renting month to month and you had lived in your place less than a year, a landlord could give you 30 days. Yeah. Now, if you lived in your place more than a year, they can't do that anymore unless they have a reason. And there's a few landlord reasons that are given, and then they, and on top of that, they would have to give you 90 days. It's way more complicated than I could spend the whole hour explaining the minutiae of this deal. But yes, if you've lived in your house less than a year right now, if you have a fixed term, they have, are not required to renew it. And if you are month to month, they could give you a no cause eviction and just tell you to leave, even if you pay rent on time and are capable. Now, it's complicated now, right now, because we're in the midst of a global pandemic. I'm sure you're aware, the COVID-19 crisis. And a lot of people have lost income. A lot of people have lost their jobs in our community. And so the governor has passed actually two separate orders now, as of Wednesday, a second one, restricting evictions during the crisis up until at least, well, up until June sometime when the order is lifted, unless it's extended, which says that landlords can't give notice, can't actually, the second, first order was entirely enforcement. The second order now includes starting the filing process or giving notices related to eviction. So during the crisis here, and that's actually only for non-payment of rent or no cause, and it doesn't outline that very well, but the idea is someone couldn't pay their rent, but a landlord were still able to just say, oh yeah, it's not because you can't pay rent, we just don't want you here anymore, because that was current, was legal before, and they can no longer do that. It doesn't restrict a landlord from giving an eviction for some other reason, like you violated your agreement, anything that would be allowable under the chapter. Otherwise,
right, damages,
that depends. What,
Josh,
potentially.
I have to interrupt you again. You guys heard what DJ Susti said, but those on the air did not hear what you said. DJ Susti, it's not coming through clearly when you talk. I don't know why.
It's something there on the board that you don't have turned up. But let's just keep going then, because he can hear me, and apparently you can hear me.
I can hear
you.
What
about turn down your headphones? For one thing.
Now you're sounding better. Keep going.
Okay. So let's stick with, before we get into the coronavirus stuff, let's stick with just some basics on what you were allowed before the coronavirus.
Before,
like how much rent control, how much are they allowed to raise your rent? So now again,
this is complicated, and there are some exceptions and exemptions in the bill. But generally speaking, what it says is that a landlord, generally speaking, cannot raise a tenant's rent more than 7% plus a year, plus the consumer price index, which is around 3%. Last year it was 3.4%. This year it's been termed to be about 2.9%. So last year it was 10.4%, and this year it's about 2.9%. And again, it's the other thing about that, why I like to call it a rent cap and not rent control, is that, you know, my landlord didn't raise my rent at all this year. A lot of landlords raise the rent around the amount of inflation or slightly above, like 5% every couple years, you know, generous or nicer landlords or whatever, just because that actually covers their costs. But what we were seeing before that bill, and in some cases after, and it's complicated, is really large increase, like 30, 40, 100%. Not all across the board, but it was legal to do that. And the reason the bill was really focused on restricting no-cause evictions, and it hasn't gotten eliminated them at all, but it did restrict them. And the rent cap really had more to do with that, because 10% is actually still a lot, but it's possible, you know. Whereas if
Your rent would double in 10 years at 10%.
Yeah, but it's more about no-cause evictions, because if someone said that if we just made no-cause evictions not allowed, but there was no cap at all in place, someone could just be like, oh, well, I'm not evicting you, but I'm going to raise your rent 100%, and that effectively evicts anyone. And so that's why it really, people who say this is rent control are it's very misleading. It really doesn't have to do with that. 10% is quite a lot. And it was supposed to be. It was really to protect against no-cause evictions to some extent.
But it sounds like the landlords are still in a pretty good position there. So then I thought there's a $5,000. I thought they have to pay for you to relocate. There's another
piece in it about relocation assistance. And Portland actually has some stronger protections here. And they passed a bill regarding this before this bill passed. And that's even more complicated. But I won't get into that. It's a lot. The relocation assistance, I don't remember the exact number at the moment, and it's kind of cool if I'm candid and I don't look up perfect details for you, but the bill is called SB 608. If you called my hotline, I could get the actual numbers. But relocation assistance, the main thing is if a landlord owns more than 4 rental properties, they did this to a tenant, they wanted to get rid of them, and they had a qualifying reason, because there are qualifying reasons, they would have to give their tenant, again, after a year. If you've been less than a year, you get none of the protections of this bill. Mm. None of the protections apply to someone in their home less than a year. But after a year, if the landlord owns more than 4 rental units, they would have to... greater than 4 rental units, they would have to pay their tenant some relocation assistance, which is a number of months rent. That's what it says. But if a landlord has less than 5 or 4 or less, or 4 or fewer rental properties, they do not have to do that.
Well, but at least it addresses a corporate, landlord that has, you know, thousands of properties and has plenty of money that they can draw from.
And that is why that bill, you know, why I get frustrated when people on either side are angry about this bill, because it's a real starting point. You know, it's got a lot of compromises in it, but it's not, some people say, oh, it didn't do anything. And I say, no, it actually did quite a bit. There are some provisions that I really don't like, it's true. Absolutely. You know, someone, an older person who inherited a property, you know, and has one rental unit and is living off that income, should we restrict them in the same ways that we restrict a big corporate entity that's making boatloads of money and doesn't run the risk of losing their own property if they can't afford, you know, if they lose rent or can't afford to relocate someone? Or, you know, there are reasons for those exemptions, and there are certainly smaller scale landlords that need that help.
Well, and so you're saying they're going to keep revising it and fine-tune it over the next few years?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a hope for me. That bill was really hard to get passed alone. Now, again, I mean, when we get into coronavirus, who knows what's going to happen, because everything is just, we live in a complete, it's very hard to discuss these things now. I really appreciate them, because what I think people don't, maybe, it's hard for all of us to understand just how much that just, a month ago, we entered into a completely new paradigm, and that may sound like crazy, but it's really not. I mean, the world is just not going to be the same after this.
But that's just it. The Renters Association is a very powerful lobby in this state. Isn't that true? Isn't that why, aren't they the reason why it was so difficult to get this thing passed?
The
Rental Owners Association. Are they still going to be in power when this crisis ends?
That is a powerful lobby. There are powerful entities, and the Rental Homeowners Association of Oregon definitely is already submitting public testimony to the state legislative committee on coronavirus response. You can actually, if everyone's interested in the Oregon Legislative Information System, OLIS, you can look that up online and you can follow it. And you can read public testimony from that group, which was advocating for direct rental assistance payments to landlords, and actually weakening of this that renter protections bill at the simultaneously.
During the crisis and after the crisis.
Yeah, in response to this, I heard a member of that organization talk about how eviction moratoriums would set a bad precedent. I'm not going to name names here, but you know, maybe I will someday. But in a public meeting on renter protections in Eugene, now I don't know if it was a popular opinion or not in the room, and there's actually, you know, I was watching a meeting of that committee at the state, and there was a representative who was speaking and was explaining why direct rent assistance payments would need to go to landlords. And she explained that she had previously had tenants, some of them who received assistance, and some of them were just so low income that they might be too inclined to spend that money on other things.
That isn't how it works. It would go. They're not going to be allowed to spend it on any other things, are they?
Well, no. That's why they are lobbying for that. Because if you were to just give them money for rental assistance or money generally, they might be too inclined to spend it on something else.
I'm going to stick with tenants' rights here. But so the point the eviction moratorium, you are still going to have to make up your rent, whereas the especially the corporate landowners, they have a mortgage that they will have a forbearance on their mortgage, so they are more than likely will only have to make it up at the end of their mortgage, whereas a person renting is going to have to make up their rent right away, even though there's a moratorium on eviction.
There haven't been forbearances on all mortgages, we should say.
I've heard that just recently, that they're having trouble. People are having trouble. The banks are not issuing them properly, but
I do appreciate, I just, details are really hard to catch up with and be on top of, but I do appreciate where you're coming from. But generally speaking, the spirit of your question, and regardless of the details, is, and whether I understand them fully at this point, is absolutely accurate. Renters, this is why we've been pushing on this moratorium, and there will have to be more. CETA, ourselves as an organization, has not come up with a specific demand yet related to that. We had been, before the governor's moratorium, pushing the county to have their own moratorium more so. Multnomah County came out and did it quickly. But yes. Basically,
moratorium on evictions, right? Not on rent.
On evictions, well,
moratorium. But what does that look like? I have this lump of balloon payment that I'm going to have to come up with as a tenant.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I will. If you want to hear some numbers, I was reading through the Eugene Springfield Joint Consolidated Plan, which is a process that happens every 5 years, and we have to be in the mix of one. And there's ample data in there about renters. And before this, before COVID-19, there were, in Eugene and Springfield, there were over 28,000 renters who were living at 80% or below the area median income. Over 75% of them were paying more than a third of their income on housing costs, and more than half of those people, so around a third of all these people, were paying more than half of their income on housing costs. And in Lane, another statistic that terrifies me is in Lane County, this is the county number, before COVID-19, the service industry was the third largest sector of the economy, with about 33,304 people employed, with the lowest median income of any sector at $15,485. So if there's any overlap between these numbers, and we can assume that a huge number of those people have lost their incomes, that's something like 15,000 people, like really roughly conservatively estimating, who both didn't have a month's savings at all and have lost income. And, of course, obviously we should be very clear, the solution cannot be right now in a public health emergency to send everyone back outside. Right. So, yeah, we have thousands and thousands of people, I mean tens of thousands of people, who, under our current legal structures, could end up in crippling debt spirals at the end of June when any sort of moratorium is lifted and be simply unable to pay. And yeah, as of this point, not much has been done to address that. I mean, we are getting some sort of federal assistance and the state is going to do something. But given how crazy those numbers are in a city that already had, by some counts, the largest unsheltered per capita homeless population in the entire nation, I mean, yeah, that should be terrifying to anyone. And I think, to me, I don't have one specific thing. When people talk about rent strikes and whether there's a suspension of rent and stuff, I'm not, you know, I can't say that my organization right now is advocating for something like that specifically. What I can tell you is that some of the most radical ideas you could have possibly come up with a mere month ago, radical sounding ideas, may simply be the only mathematically feasible solutions after coronavirus.
Right, because there's radical groups that have advocated for a rent suspension for years. And so yeah. And you're saying, so now those are becoming mainstream. That's going to become mainstream.
I mean, my work right now is responding to a increase in tenant questions on my hotline and a lot and more attention, like inquiries like yours, for people who hadn't reached out before and suddenly are like, oh, a tenant association, this sounds interesting. And we are getting more questions about things like that, but absolutely. I mean, the things that sounded radical are just not really radical anymore. The need in our community is just so large that there are going to be very radical sounding solutions that may not even solve the problem.
Well, and I will say, I'd like to see the Fed rather than the states take the burden of this, because the Fed has, you know, my federal tax dollars are just go to war and bail out large corporations. And I mean, it's basic Keynesian economics. This has been vetted and proven to work, that you need to put money in at the bottom rather than at the top. And that money, if you were to just pay people to live for free or pay people's rent for several months while they got back on their feet, would.
And other countries are looking at giving people more money than the United States is. Although, you know, the unemployment package is a little bit better than I realized. But it's not enough. I mean, yeah, I'm with you. It does. A lot of this is going to have to be federal. Our states just only have so much, and our cities and our counties just only have so much ability to respond to this. But they do. It is easier to contact your state legislators, I will say, and your county and city officials in order to put pressure on the increasingly higher level of government.
And the states have to sell bonds in order to fund this stuff, so they can only sell so many bonds. And I don't think they would go bankrupt, but the Fed wouldn't go bankrupt.
Yes.
Whereas
no,
states
I
could potentially go bankrupt.
I absolutely agree with you on a lot of that has to be federal response. A lot of people get kind of, I think, intimidated by, you know, if you reach out to your state level senators and representatives, sometimes they're just flooded with communications. You wonder if they're even listening. Whereas your state rep, you know, you can actually get on the phone with or find a town hall of, and the city and the county. I mean, you know, they actually are seeing your messages and feeling your pain and can help you apply that pressure further up the chain.
Well, you realize there's a mayor's association and a governor's association, that if they all just gang together attack the Fed, that there's power in numbers.
Yeah.
And then one other thing is, it used to be when I was a kid, your rent was only a quarter of your income,
mm-hmm.
back in the 70s.
Yeah, not
And that was what you know, everyone was a baseline that everyone used, you know, economists used. They assumed your rent would only be a quarter of your income, and then it became a third, and now apparently it's half.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now, back in the 70s, real wages were a lot higher.
Right.
So rents have not only gone up astronomically, and the culture around squeezing the bottom has also become more accepted, apparently. But also, well, I mean, it's related, but also people take home less. Let's be clear. People of color have always experienced these problems.
I don't want to get into redlining. That's a whole hour.
But when we talk about the 70s.
That redlining, but yeah. Go on.
No, but I have to make that caveat because when I say other things, people of color are like, well, wait, no, we've always felt that pain. So you absolutely have to acknowledge that, and we should get into that stuff. But you're right, it's a completely different one. What I just mean is when we look back, back at a lot of the stuff you're talking about, I mean, you know, the way things worked, you know, before I was born, in the 70s, when you were a kid and before that, I mean, before Ronald Reagan, basically,
right.
Also, were just more generous, at least for, you know,
humane
working. Yeah, humane, at least for, you know, working class white males.
There's been an increase. I don't know if you have stats on this, but there's been an increase in corporate ownership. That's probably the reason I keep going there, is that's what my show is kind of about, is state sponsored
consolidation.
That's where the ownership has shifted toward corporate ownership. And that's, in my opinion, that's what is causing all this. Well, so you wanted to talk about tenants' rights, so I'm going to try and stick with that. What type of calls are you getting on the line then?
What was I getting? But yeah, you know, everything's, I'm getting more. Okay. Let's talk corporate ownership. Actually, I can give one example. One thing I got a spike in calls about since COVID-19, that may seem initially like not something that you're so worried about, but I'll get into it. I got a spike of calls from actually like mothers of college students, and their college students want to get out of their leases because everything's going to be remote and they can't, there's no real reason for them to stay here. They want to be with their families. And under normal circumstances, the way this works is either a rental agreement can have a lease break fee that can be no more than 1.5 months rent, or a tenant could be held responsible for rent until a new tenant is found or the end of the agreement. Now, normally vacancy rates are very low. It's very easy to find a new tenant. So, you know, a room might fill in a few days, so big deal. But right now, it's hard to find tenants. Every student is wanting to do this at once. So these people who don't have much income and some of their parents are losing income might be held responsible for rents for months that they're not even living here because school is closed and their jobs are closed if they had them, and maybe their parents' jobs are closed too. So that's one thing I got several calls about in one day. I've also been getting calls from people who want the moratorium explained to them or are looking for other people who provide rent assistance. It's not something we do because they lost their jobs. Before that and during that, we get calls about, it's common practice for landlords, I would say big corporate ones, but also sometimes individuals, to simply think it's their right to keep a tenant's security deposit or charge them for things. And there are, a security deposit is supposed to be refundable. And there are some things you can charge for, and you are, you know, if there are specific damages done, you can only charge for things that are beyond normal wear and tear. Anyway, so security deposits is a big issue. One thing that we get lots of calls about in Eugene, specifically, that I think is interesting, that's not so common everywhere else, is landlords, and this is probably much more the larger companies than individual landlords. I don't hear individual landlords ever doing this. Wanting to lock tenants into fixed-term leases, and so at the end of a tenant's lease, or even when they're month-to-month already, they'll say, you know, well, also, they'll compel a tenant. A tenant is supposed to give, by the law, a tenant, if they want to leave, they have to give their landlord 30 days. But a landlord would have to give their tenant 90 days if they had a fixed term. And so, but at or before 90 days, a landlord will say, hey, we want to know if you're going to sign a new lease. Otherwise, we're automatically not renewing your lease. And so they compel a tenant to give more time than they're supposed to. And the other one they'll do if a tenant's not protected by the new law. If a tenant is protected by the new law, wherein they can't do that, and the lease would automatically go month to month if the tenant did nothing, the landlord will say, if you sign a year-long lease with us, your rent will be this much. But if you go month to month, we're going to raise your rent more. And this is something people call us about all the time. Can they do this to me? And occasionally, a landlord will be trying to raise the rent more than they can legally, but sometimes not. But either way, this is really, it's stiff-arming and kind of bullying behavior that even when it's, you know, lawful, really, really bothers a lot of tenants. And I could go on and on about the common, but those are several of my common buckets, and then the ones that I wasn't getting before, but I'm suddenly getting now as well.
But most of it's pretty much legal. It sounds like the landlords seem to have more rights than the tenants by far.
I mean, I would say that would be not totally incorrect. Tenants do have a lot of rights. They have rights to habitability standards and to get one thing. Okay. I don't know how much more time I have. We're getting pretty close. Or are you having fun? Are we doing okay?
Yeah, yeah. No, let's go. You got 20 minutes though, but yeah.
Oh,
okay. We can take up the whole hour.
Oh, great. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Curtis. Okay. So, I mean, it depends on the issue. But I would say overall, I mean, there's a power dynamic here. Of course, someone who owns the property is going to have more rights than the person who doesn't. But there are other things that I think are more kind of subtly challenging. Which is even when a tenant does have rights, their ability to access those rights. And that's why that's one reason I exist, but I can't always help. I have a lot of like interactions with landlord-tenant lawyers around. And one thing, you know, we send some people to legal aid, but legal aid is a very low threshold for who they can serve. They can only serve people at generally around 125% of poverty or below. And there's some other modest means programs around that will give people cheaper consults and sliding scale, but that can even be too much money for people. So if you make, you know, something, you can still be very, very low income and not qualify for free legal services and yet still unable to really afford a lawyer, even a sliding scale one. And the problem with this is, I mean, in some cases we can just tell people this is what your right is, write your landlord a letter or just talk to your landlord maybe. And a lot of times landlords just don't understand the law and a simple conversation can help. But other times, you know, big entities will play at the edges and it can help a tenant to get simply like a note from a lawyer to their landlord to get a landlord to stop practicing certain behavior. And one reason a simple note from a lawyer can help is because under landlord-tenant law, if someone goes to court, the losing party has to pay the legal fees of the prevailing party if you go to regular court. And so if you have if someone has a lawyer, the landlord stands to lose a lot more money if they were to pursue this in court. But in practice, what that means is that if a tenant has a lawyer, a landlord is less inclined to go to court. So a landlord is more likely to stop what they're doing. But tenants are so, you know, disproportionately low income and poor in our community that they're less likely to be able to have a lawyer to begin with. So even rights that are guaranteed to you under the law are harder to access when you're a tenant.
Well, and I know the Renters Association also helps the landlords with legal advice, a little bit of legal advice.
Somewhat. They're somewhat like us in terms of on the other side. They can't give official legal advice because they're not lawyers, but they can help landlords understand the law. But again, it's a power dynamic. The landlord doesn't really have to prove that they're obeying the law until they're forced to prove that they're obeying the law. And right. A landlord is also more likely to be able to afford a lawyer. So that power dynamic just puts an undue burden on an already low-income person to advocate for themselves for rights that are supposed to be guaranteed to them already under the law.
All right. So, well, I don't know what else you want. Do you want to move on to? I can give you. You know, I don't know if you know this, but well, for one thing, that you talk about the University of, you're talking about the U of O is who the students are renting from, and
I mean they're renting from entities they're renting from private companies. The dorms actually got refunded, I think. I know a freshman.
Oh, okay. All right, because I would say that there was Amazon housing was an issue here in the 90s where a building, if you can move a building, it's structurally sound. So they took this building and sold them and moved them, and then they put in more expensive housing and raised everyone's rent. That's partly why the costs of rent have gone up, is because of investors and developers come in. So I don't know if you want to go move on to that, or is there more that you want to say on renters' rights?
Renters' rights is my main expertise. I think a lot of people, there are a lot of groups in town. I love to get into discussions about development and density conversations and stuff like that. But I also know that there's a lot of other groups in town that focus on that, and we're really the only group talking about renters' rights in town.
So what is the solution? Is there going to be a renters' strike to get a moratorium, do you think, on moratorium on rent?
I don't know. Again, I wouldn't go with what I've heard discussion of it from different groups, and I've been getting random messages, you know, constantly about things like that. But again, what I would go to is, regardless of what someone's calling for or what there is, there are simply thousands or tens of thousands of people who could end up in debt and unable to pay their rent. So how are we going to deal with that as a society? Because that is something we are going to need to deal with.
And what should people do? What do you think people should do? I'm not being facetious. Write their congressman.
I think contacting your state, you can go to, you can find your legislator. The Oregon State Legislative Service has a find your reps. I would absolutely look up your state representative.
What should they ask for?
I mean, they should, I don't have an official position from my organization on this, but I think people need to contact their state reps and tell them the position they are in and tell them that, you know, what has happened so far is just not going to be enough to save them.
Right. And also, if you're an illegal alien in here, you're none of this applies to you as a tenant. Is that true?
Yeah. I believe that first of all, no one's an alien anymore. But I know I feel appreciate where that comes from because it comes from a good place. We don't even say, Yeah, we don't even say illegal anymore. Undocumented. Yeah, I mean, if you're undocumented, you probably have that much more trouble accessing any rights. Yeah. And you won't be getting any of the relief that the federal government offers.
Mm. And so, but you're not getting any calls from them?
That's not a question I ask any of my callers. We really need to ramp up our ability to, we're so new, we need to ramp up our ability to respond to lots of different languages. So, that could be a challenge in the future.
I think it's Mecha. Our station manager did a great interview with Mecha, and they're working that's one of the issues they're working on. If you do get something, I think you can refer them to Mecha. But I can't remember what the acronym stands for.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. I mean, I do know some organizations that I can refer people to.
All right, and so how do we support the Eugene? It's the Springfield Eugene Tenants Association. How do we support you?
How do you support us? Yeah, I mean, you tell your friends. You can go to our website, SpringfieldEugeneTenantAssociation.com, and you can sign up for our newsletter. You can call us if you have questions. You can donate if you have anything, but we know the statistics. The people who we help usually couldn't afford to give us money. But if you're someone listening and you're not in this situation and you want to do that, you could. You can certainly sign up to our newsletter and help spread the word. We're trying to keep up to date on all this information that's just flooding out and all the the legislative changes that are happening and executive changes, particularly in the wake of these moratoriums. And we're trying to get that information out as quick as possible. I send newsletters when there's I wasn't doing as much before. I'm sending them when there's updates on eviction moratoriums and other things that are happening. You can tell your
subscribe to that. It's SpringfieldEugeneTenantsAssociation.com.
Yep, Springfield Eugene Tenant Association. No S, just SpringfieldEugeneTenantAssociation.com.
All right, is there anything else you want to say?
I really appreciate your time, and I feel for everyone out there listening, and I don't even know what day it is. No, I know it's Saturday, but I know where everyone is at, and I feel for them. And, now I think a lot of the corporate things you're bringing up, we may or may not agree on some of the development arguments, which is why I didn't really want to totally get into them, but I believe people like you are doing good work, and I believe everyone is trying. And I believe now is a time, there is a risk of greater consolidation and squeezing of the poorest and most vulnerable of us right now. I've heard a governor, not of Oregon, mention, and this is a great line, that poverty is a pre-existing condition. Renters are disproportionately in the neediest of categories, and all the other needy categories are disproportionately renters. And now is a time when we do need to stand up and make our voices heard. And definitely, no matter where you are on the political spectrum, contacting your state rep and your local officials and just getting involved and making sure that you're heard, that your story is known, and that your needs are known, and that it's recognized that our systems, just our laws and our systems, were not ever designed to help the neediest of us, and they are certainly not designed in the wake of a global pandemic. And we're going to need to completely rethink this new paradigm. And maybe if we're lucky, we can, I've heard other activists say be hopeful but not optimistic, because there's a lot of work to do, but maybe we can come out on the other side with a more equitable and just system. But that won't happen if we don't make it happen.
All right, Josh Caracco of Springfield Eugene Tenants Association, thanks for your good work and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Curtis. Thank you, man.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome, Josh.
Mm-hmm. All right, Nan, are you there? Nan?
Yeah, I am. Let me...
All right, can you hear me?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Community Radio. I just want to say, too, that there's something that's been bugging me over the last couple of weeks is, with this healthcare scare, you would think that NPR would get on there and say that we need Bernie Sanders in office because we need this healthcare. And meanwhile, Delaware Joe is just sitting there with his thumb, where, and just saying absolutely nothing. And, NPR is in their pledge drive right now. Call them up. I urge everyone to call them up and tell them to give Bernie Sanders equal time. They have not been giving him equal time. What they call equal time is they say, oh, yeah, Bernie, you have these great ideas, but, we need a moderate in there to win, to beat Trump, which is just completely untrue. And they need to get on the air and say that we need health care and we need Medicare for all and we need Bernie Sanders in office right away to get us some health care so that it isn't such a disaster and a complete travesty going on right now with health care. So, and the election, and there's still a chance that Bernie could win the nomination if people got up there and started saying that we need him in office. So that's all I got for you this week. Keep listening, keep supporting independent media. KEPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Community Radio. Thanks, Nan, for all her great work, and I'll try and see you next week.